about what we're going to be talking about tonight. And this certainly would be a very good lesson to invite people to hear tonight. And I'm speaking primarily of those from the community. The title of the lesson tonight is It's Best to Check with God First. And it's based on the story of when David and the Israelites wanted to move the Ark of the Covenant from Kirjath-Jearim to Jerusalem. Now that was a good thing to do, to move the Ark to Jerusalem. That's where it should have been. But they didn't check with God first as to how to go about that. And if you remember much about the story, it was a disaster. There was a fellow named Uzzah who died during that trip to Jerusalem because he touched the holy things. And so we're going to go from there and talk about how we need to check with God first on some other things, such as the organization of the church, the worship of the church, the plan of salvation, and so forth. And we're going to talk about how it's going to be a disaster in those areas if we don't check with God first. And so that will be the lesson that we'll look at tonight. And then Wednesday night, I'll go ahead and give you one more night just as a reminder. We're going to talk about raising children, but it's going to be a little bit different approach than we would normally have. We're going to talk about how raising children can sometimes make us as parents weaker. Sometimes we get caught up in their lives, and sometimes we look at the pressures that they're going through, and it causes us to compromise. And so that will be the thrust of the lesson on Wednesday night. Well, let's go ahead and get started with our lesson this morning on the book of Ecclesiastes. And I want to begin just by considering this quote from Brother Waldron. I know many of you are very familiar with him. He's, I believe, held several meetings here. And this is from one of his workbooks called Give Us a King. And he says this about the book of Ecclesiastes. The whole book is an argument that it is God who gives us the ability to enjoy life, and that apart from Him, life is empty and meaningless. All of life is therefore summed up in the responsibility to seek a relationship with God and to live life His way. The mistake men make about life is expecting more from it than there is. Now again, there's a part of this quote that I want us to give special attention to, and that is what I've got underlined up here. Apart from Him, life is empty and meaningless. When you look just at this life, life under the sun, if you don't look at it through the eyes of God, if you don't look at it through the eyes of eternity, it's pretty frustrating. It is empty. It is meaningless. And that's really why you see different forms of the word vanity throughout the book. In fact, if I have counted correctly, you'll find some form of the word vanity 38 times in these 12 chapters. You'll see expressions like vanity of vanities, all is vanity. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I saw that this too was vanity. That's the type of thing that you see over and over again in the book of Ecclesiastes. So this morning I want us to take a closer look at the vanity of life under the sun. And again, that's an expression that you see time and time again throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to be concentrating this morning on some of the things which make this life so frustrating. And we're going to detail quite a few of them in the lesson this morning. Keep in mind, though, now this lesson is going to be on the discouraging end, okay? It's going to be a little bit depressing. But keep in mind, though, that we're looking at life apart from God, apart from eternity. Now, thankfully, Thursday morning, we'll shift gears. And instead of looking at life under the sun, then we'll look at life above the sun. We'll look at life through the eyes of God and through the eyes of eternity. Now that doesn't mean that all of these frustrating things about this life are just going to suddenly go away. But we'll be able to endure them a lot better when we look at them through the eyes of eternity. And we'll be able to profit from them in a spiritual sense. Again, if we're looking through the eyes of God or through the eyes of eternity. And so let's begin by looking at some of the frustrating, discouraging things about life under the sun. First of all, this world has a lot of problems that just cannot be fixed. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and let's read verses 14 and 15. Ecclesiastes 1, 14 and 15. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. The fact that we have a lot of problems in this world is obvious to anyone who has spent very much time at all in this world. It was interesting to me to discover that somebody has actually put together a book called The Encyclopedia of World Problems. Now, this was published back in 1995. It has three volumes, and it has 3,000 pages in those three volumes. And in that encyclopedia, it covers 12,000 different world problems. Now, that, again, was published back in 1995. That was 15 years ago. We probably could add to that number now. Now, one of the volumes, at least, it may be two volumes, I can't remember for sure, but at least one or two of the volumes is spent trying to come up with solutions for those 12,000 world problems. And perhaps they've done a pretty good job with some of them, I don't know. But you know as well as I do, there are some problems out there that are never, ever going to be fixed completely. When I mention the Middle East, what do you think of? Fighting, war, conflict, and it's been that way since biblical times. And it's extremely doubtful that that's ever going to change. Now, I'm not saying that effort shouldn't be made to try to bring some peace and all that, but I'm just saying that's been a problem for a long time, and it's going to continue to be a problem. Do you think poverty is ever going to go away? I doubt it very seriously, especially since Jesus even said, the poor you have with you always. Now, again, I'm not against some of the efforts that are made to alleviate poverty, but I'm just saying that there has always been a problem with it, and I suppose there will always be a problem with it. How much has been invested, you think, in the war against drugs? I mean, just billions and billions of dollars have been poured into the effort to try to get some kind of handle on this drug problem. And again, I'm all in favor of trying to exterminate them, but, boy, they just haven't been all that successful, have they? In other words, some of the problems we have in this world, it doesn't matter how much ingenuity is applied to them, they're just going to always be a problem. All you have to do is just pick up the newspaper, go online, watch the 10 o'clock news. Mama and I watched the 10 o'clock news last night, and it was story after story telling about some problem. This child was neglected. This child was abused. This, you know, had this domestic, you know, dispute. I mean, it was just over and over again. And those things are going to continue until the end of time. This world has a lot of problems that cannot be fixed. And so, if I'm looking for a paradise here on earth, it's not going to happen. This life can be mighty frustrating, and this is just one of the reasons why that's so. But then here's another thing that's frustrating about life under the sun. No matter how much wisdom we obtain, we will still end up like the fool, dead and forgotten. Now, when the book of Ecclesiastes uses the word wisdom, usually it's not talking about heavenly wisdom. For the most part, when the word wisdom is used in Ecclesiastes, it's talking about earthly wisdom. And there's a couple of different ways we can approach this. First of all, let's say that you decide that you're going to get a lot of education. Okay, you've got your high school degree. That's not good enough for you. You go ahead and you get you a four-year degree. You get you a master's degree. Perhaps you even get you a doctorate degree. Well, guess what? In the end, the same thing that's going to happen to you is going to happen to the fool. Okay? You're going to die just like him. Look in chapter 2. Chapter 2, beginning with verse 13. That's the very point that is brought out here in this passage. Chapter 2, beginning with verse 13. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly, as light excels darkness. Of course, we would all agree with that. That sounds good so far. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Again, that we agree with that. But look at what he figured out. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Why did I spend all this time trying to acquire all this wisdom? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. The very same thing happens to him. Now let's forget about the education thing for just a minute. Let's say that's not your thing. But you are the type of person that really pays attention. In other words, as you go through life and as you experience different things, you try your best to learn from that. And there are some people who are pretty smart in that way. Some of the smartest people I know barely got a high school education. Some of them didn't even get a high school education. But they paid attention. And they have learned a lot from their life experiences. I mean, they're wise in so many different ways, in so many different areas. But you know what? They're going to die. Just like the fool. And so if we're looking just at life under the sun, wouldn't it be easy to ask, well, why did I bother? Why did I bother to get that education? Why did I bother to learn from all of my life experiences? Because the same thing's going to happen to me that happened to the fool. Now, obviously, there have been some very wise people through the years who have been remembered. Okay, they're recorded in our history books. And you kids in school, you'll learn about some of the notable figures in American history and in world history. So there are some people who will be remembered through the ages because they will continue to be in our history books. But they are the exception. Think about the billions and billions and billions of people who have lived on this earth since it was created. Most of them are completely forgotten. And even the ones that are remembered, as time goes by, we have less and less appreciation for them. A lot of folks thought Ronald Reagan was a very good president. I was one of those, and I'm not trying to make any kind of political statement here. I thought he was a pretty good president in many ways. But as time goes by, he'll be appreciated less and less. And that would apply to so many other people. And so again, if we're looking at life apart from God, if we're just looking at life under the sun, really, what's the point in getting all this wisdom? Because we're going to end up just like the fool. Some other frustrating things about this life. No matter how much wealth we obtain, obviously we won't be able to take it with us. And the folks we leave it to may squander every bit of it. Look in chapter 2, beginning with verse 18. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. Well, that's frustrating, isn't it? There are a number of people who have worked very hard throughout their lives, and there are some of them here in this assembly today. You've worked hard. And some of you managed to put some away during that time. You maybe made some good investments. Maybe you were able to buy a piece of land here and there. Maybe you were able to put a good bit into your retirement fund. You've been able to do pretty well with that. You put a lot of effort into that. Well, you know as well as I do, you can't take it with you. And let's say you still have a good bit left at the end. Well, there's the possibility that all of that could be gone before your body is cold in the grave. And so when you sit down and start looking at it that way, it's like, well, what was the point? I put all this work in, and I put all this aside. I was careful in my saving, and poof, it's gone. Isn't that a little bit frustrating? And again, when you just look at life under the sun, it's pretty discouraging. Okay, you don't really see much point to it when you just look at life under the sun. Another frustrating or discouraging thing about this life is there is a great deal of injustice in the world. Look in chapter 3 and verse 16. Now, as soon as we read this verse, I know what's going to pop into some of you's head. Chapter 3 and verse 16, "Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, where rulers, officials, administrators, where they would sit, in that place wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there." I'm sure you kids are still very familiar, and hopefully all of us are, with the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, hey, I'm all for saying the Pledge of Allegiance. No problem with that. But one of the lines in the Pledge of Allegiance is, "With liberty and justice for all." Now, that's a nice ideal to strive for. But we do not have liberty and justice for all. There are a lot of injustices. And you know why there are a lot of injustices? Well, it's brought out here in this passage. Where you have rulers and administrators and so forth, you've got some corrupt people. There are corrupt people in those positions. And they've got a lot of control over what happens in the justice system many times. There are corrupt judges. There are corrupt lawyers. There are people who serve on juries that should not ever serve on a jury. In fact, sometimes when I hear the phrase, "the jury of my peers," sometimes I think, I've seen some of my peers, and I'm not sure that I would want them deciding my fate. There are corrupt people in high places, and that's going to ensure that there will always be quite a bit of injustice. Look in chapter 4 and verse 1, kind of looking at a different thought, still under this general category here. In chapter 4 and verse 1, "Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors there is power, but they have no comforter." Now this is, to me especially, disheartening. How many people are being oppressed today who have no recourse, who have no means of doing anything about it? There are elderly people today who are being abused, who are being neglected. And bless their heart, they're not in a position to do a whole lot, are they? They don't have the strength of body to do a whole lot, don't have the strength of mind to do a whole lot. Well, let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Think about a lot of small children. Are there a lot of children being abused and neglected? You better believe it. What we see and hear on the news, that's just a tiny fraction. And we know this, don't we? That's just a tiny fraction of what's going on throughout this world. And again, they're not in a position to be able to do a whole lot about it. It's sad, all the people who are being oppressed, who have no comforter, who have no one they can cry out to. And again, I know in some situations, you know, people find out about it and they're able to get them out of that situation, but there are a lot of people who will stay in that situation their entire lives. And so if we're looking to get a lot out of just this life under the sun, then we're barking up the wrong tree. There are a lot of disheartening things going on out there in the world. Look also in chapter 10. Chapter 10, beginning with verse 5. And again, as soon as we read this, you'll probably be able to immediately think of some things that you've seen that relate to what this passage is talking about. Ecclesiastes 10, beginning in verse 5, there is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity. Now, for great dignity, there's a note in my margin that says exalted positions. In other words, there are fools in exalted positions. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. There are a number of applications that we could make of this, but to me, one of the main points in this passage is there are a lot of people in positions of power who are ill-fitted for those positions. Most of you, I think, have probably lived long enough to understand that the very best people in this world, the people with the highest character, they will never be in those positions. They can't afford it, for one thing. Okay? And you know as well as I do, if they maintain their integrity, if they maintain their character under all these different tests they face, they'd be booted out of office in no time. It's all about compromising all the time. Giving into this special interest, into that special interest. And again, I'm not trying to get up here and wax long and hard about politics. I'm just stating the facts. We know that's what goes on. Folly is set in great dignity. There are people in positions of power who have no business being there. And we are affected by some of the foolish decisions that they make. Again, something else frustrating about life under the sun. Those who work hard and who work skillfully, instead of being appreciated, those people are often envied. In Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 4. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. I'm sure you're familiar with the expression success breeds success. Well, I'll tell you something else success breeds. It breeds enemies. Success breeds enemies. People hate a winner for the most part. I mean, you could apply this, obviously, in the realm of sports. Many of us could probably relate to that. I mean, when you're winning and winning a lot, you're the target, okay? People start, you know, saying very disparaging things about you. You may not deserve any of it. You've just gone about your business. You've done a better job than they have, and you're just winning. But people hate you for it. But think about even in the workplace. I don't know if this has ever happened to any of you, but let's say you worked hard and you worked conscientiously. And you got yourself a promotion. And now, maybe some of the people that you were working alongside of, that you were kind of equal to, maybe now you're over them. Well, they don't look at you the same way now, do they? They don't look at you the same way now. Well, you're the boss. And the boss is, he's often hated. Now, he may have done everything right to get to that position. He may have been in that position because he worked like he was supposed to work, but he's often envied by his workers. I remember back when they were doing the 2000 census. I did some work for the census. I was one of those that, you know, went out for the people that didn't mail theirs in. You know, I went out and did the interviews with them and so forth. Well, I did that for a couple of weeks, and one of the supervisors, he said, I want you to become a supervisor too. I want to put some people under you. And I told him then, I said, no, I don't think so. I said, I'll keep doing this. He said, and I told him, I said, I've heard people talk about supervisors. I said, I don't want that. I don't need that. And that's really the way it works in this life. So many times, I know there are exceptions, okay? And many times there's a way to handle yourself as a boss that keeps people from hating your guts. But I'm just telling you, this is the way it works so many times. Success, you work hard, you think, well, I'm going to get my just desserts now, but people have sometimes a terrible attitude toward you. They're looking for ways to shoot you down because of their envy towards you. Another frustrating thing about life under the sun, the wicked, at least in some cases, appear to be doing much better than the righteous. Chapter 7 and verse 15. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 15. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. And again, presumably the author of Ecclesiastes is Solomon. I know there's some debate about that, but I'm pretty sure myself. And if it is Solomon, it doesn't even matter. Whoever it is, whether it be Solomon or someone else, they experience far more than any of us have ever experienced. So he knows what he's talking about. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness. And there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. Chapter 8 in verse 14. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. You got people who are living just as sorry as they possibly can. And sometimes, not only are their days prolonged, sometimes not only do they live longer than the person who's really trying to live right over here, not only do they live longer sometimes, it appears that they may even be prospering, that they're getting along just fine. And so, again, if you just look at life under the sun, what might you say? What's the point? Why struggle and try to do right and make sacrifices and deny myself some of these pleasures over here? Why go through all of that if sometimes they're doing better than I am? Again, just one of the frustrating things about life under the sun. Continuing our list here, though, outcomes are often very unpredictable in this life. In other words, life doesn't always turn out the way we plan. Look in chapter 9. In chapter 9, let's look at verses 11 and 12. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Now that's kind of an odd passage, isn't it? The race is not to the swift. Shouldn't the swift win the race? The battle is not to the strong. I thought the strongest would always win the battle. Well, sometimes they do. Any of you watch the Olympics and watch that Usain Bolt run? That's the fastest person I've ever seen in my life. He was the fastest one, and he won that day. But you know, the race is not always the swift. The battle's not always the strong, because there's those two little things that he mentions there at the end of verse 11. Time and chance happens to them all. Time and chance. He talks there at the end of verse 12 about how the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. In other words, something just happens out of the blue that keeps that swift person from winning the race, that keeps that strong person from winning the battle. I'll ask the question of all of you here this morning. Have you got your life all mapped out? In other words, 5 years from now, you want to be doing this. 10 years from now, you want to be doing that. You know, 10 years from now, you want to have this much set aside. You've got this plan for retirement. I mean, how many of you have got it kind of, at least some sort of general plan? Well, you know, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's better than having no plan at all, obviously. But all I would say, based on what we see here in the book of Ecclesiastes, is don't be disappointed when it doesn't turn out that way. There may be some calamities on the horizon that you never, ever planned for. You may also be snared in an evil time. Outcomes are often very unpredictable. And really, when you start thinking about all this, when you see a passage like this, it does kind of make you stop and think, again, if we're just looking at life under the sun, why don't I just completely go by the seat of my pants? Why do all this planning if I don't even know if it's going to turn out that way? Again, just part of life under the sun. Another frustrating part about life under the sun, and this kind of relates to something we talked about earlier, but wisdom is not always appreciated. Again, we're not just talking strictly here about heavenly wisdom, just earthly wisdom, and really the type of wisdom that can still be beneficial as far as conducting your affairs here on this earth. Look in chapter 9, beginning with verse 13. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it. And a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. So get the picture that he's drawing here. Now there was found in it, that is in this city, a poor wise man. And he by his wisdom delivered the city. And so that's great, isn't it? There's going to be a ticker tape parade for this man. What a wonderful guy. This poor fellow over here saved us. What great wisdom he imparted to us. He gave us just the right strategy. We're going to have a parade for him, and we'll celebrate him from now on to eternity. It says, yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Concentrate especially there on verse 17. I believe we can see some application there. Haven't you been around some people who were just obnoxious? And they were loud. They had opinions about everything, and they weren't afraid to express them. Now, they may not have a clue as to what they're talking about. But because they speak often, and because they speak loudly, and because they demand that their voice be heard, guess what? They get listened to. People pay attention to them. This loud, obnoxious guy over here who maybe doesn't have a clue, people are paying more attention to him than the quiet fellow over here who really has some really good advice. Again, doesn't that happen? Wisdom is not always appreciated. When the media sometimes wants to get answers as to what to do about the problems in the Middle East, when they want to know what should be done about world hunger, when they want to know how to handle the Sudan crisis, isn't it amazing that they will go and ask some entertainer? They'll ask an entertainer, somebody who's real good at singing. Okay, what are their credentials? They're a star. Okay, they're real good at that. They're on TV all the time. What qualities do they have that would help them solve the Sudan crisis? I don't understand. Or they'll go to an athlete. Or they'll go to some other famous person. Now, there may be people out here that might have some much better advice, but these are the people. Wisdom's not appreciated. Good looks are appreciated more than that. Athletic ability, musical talent, those things are appreciated a whole lot more than wisdom. And so because of that, you might say, well, again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. What's the use in acquiring any wisdom here on this earth when folks don't really pay that much attention? One other point we want to make in this morning's lesson, another frustrating thing about life under the sun, and I have a feeling that there are a number of you today, here today, who could offer some testimony on this one. And that is that old age is often very difficult to bear. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes 12, beginning with verse 1. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come. And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Now look at the figures that are used in verses 2 through 5. See if you can sort of figure out what different bodily functions he's describing here. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few. You know what he means by the grinders, don't you? And those that look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird. You know what that's talking about, don't you? And all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Here comes old age. Yeehaw. You begin to lose your teeth. You begin to lose your hearing. You begin to lose your sight. You can't sleep through the slightest sound. I mean, it just takes the singing of a little small bird to wake you up. Things that you used to not be afraid of, you're afraid of them now. You don't want to go out at night nearly as much as you used to. It didn't even bother you before, but now you're much more afraid. Oh, something could happen. Something could. Before, you didn't even think about all that stuff that could happen. But now you're worried about this and you're worried about that. And old age is very difficult to bear. And boy, if we just looked at life under the sun. Now again, that's what we're doing this morning. We're not looking through the eyes of God. We're not looking through the eyes of eternity. We're just looking at just this life, life under the sun. If this is all there is, that's mighty discouraging, isn't it? Because really, we don't really get very many good years, do we? In other words, old age comes pretty fast. And I don't want to discourage any of the elderly here, but we just need to be real frank about this. If that's all I've got to look forward to, if I'm going to hopefully enjoy a measure of decent health for a period of time, but then that's what I've got to look forward to, and there's nothing beyond that, it almost makes you want to say, no thank you. No thank you. I'm 48 years old now, and I have begun to think more seriously along these lines. I watch elderly people, and I watch their struggles, and I think about that that's going to be me. And again, if there was nothing beyond that, I would be one more depressed individual. If there was nothing beyond that. But thank God there is. There is something beyond that. And so it's much easier to bear, isn't it? Because we know what God has waiting for us. We're able to endure these times and still continue to rejoice, as Philippians talks about, because we know that God, through Jesus Christ, has provided an eternal home for us. And that's really where we'll take this discussion Thursday morning. We're going to bring God back into view. We're going to bring eternity back into view. We're going to bring spiritual concerns back into view. Instead of looking at just life under the sun, we're going to look at life above the sun. And I promise you that Thursday's lesson will be much more encouraging than this one today. So I hope that all of you can make it back for that. Go ahead and get out your songbooks. We're going to sing the song of encouragement here in just a moment. There may be someone here this morning who needs to make their life right with God. There may be someone here today who needs to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ and become one of God's children. We talked last night about the wonderful blessings that are available in Christ for you if you make that decision. There may be someone here that needs to come back to the Lord, make confession of wrong. There may be someone here who doesn't need to do anything publicly here today, just needs to rededicate themselves. Maybe hasn't been near as active and zealous and diligent in doing the Lord's will, and you just say, well, it's time for me to just pick it up. Again, it may not necessarily be anything that needs to be done publicly, but we need to get busy. Don't know how much more time we have. All of us will stand before the judgment seat of Christ and give an account of the things done in this body. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. So if we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and sing.